CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. 17 January, and if you're watching the clock for some reason, it's just after 7. You know, some people like to know what the time is so that they can figure out whether they're late or early. And if you're early, it's always great because you have a little bit of time to mess around. If you're late, it's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, that feeling just puts you in stress mode and you panic. And you know what? It's not worth it. So do yourself a favor right now and just everybody take a big deep breath. It's too early in the year to get panicked. Are you ready? That was very asthmatic of you, Mads.
You know.
Yeah, you got the asthma.
Yeah.
The asthma.
You should hear my belly sometimes.
It's like taking her last breath.
Do you still carry that thing around?
Yes,
you
I have
do. You
to.
Have the pump? Mm. Can I see it? Is it full? You have a full cartridge there?
Yes, I do.
Do you ever get like different flavors, like vaping asthma? Or is it just one up?
I'm sorry, what?
It doesn't have a taste, does it?
No.
No, it's just like a nebulizer.
But maybe I think that's a business venture.
But it requires something though. So you can go to like a nebulizer bar and then you go, okay, well, I want some, I don't know, roasted cherry today.
I'm surprised nobody has sort of this idea up until now.
Guys, there's a gap in the market. Somebody grab this.
Because like asthma is kind of rare, but at the same time, it's not exactly one in a million.
There's it's actually quite common.
There are a lot of people who have
it. But people feel kind of embarrassed when they go for the inhaler, right? But if it puts this plume of, I don't know, lavender out afterwards.
No.
Well, I don't think you want the taste of lavender in your mouth, though.
No.
Probably not, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm spitballing with you here.
Here we go. Okay.
All right. Listen, before we get into some serious news, can I ask Sia to please fetch his bag? I need you to see this bag. We will describe it to you if you are... I know we've got important news in the world and there's stuff that everybody's talking about and we need to talk about these Ford Cougars and everything else, but this bag, have you seen it?
No.
Oh. Well, Gareth, I'll be sure to put it on the Instagram page for today.
Look at this. All right. First of all, it's the size. It's like he's going on. It's an overnight bag, basically.
No, it is not.
Yes, it is. It's an overnight bag. That's what I use if I go to Cape Town for the weekend. It's a gigantic bag.
Okay.
And he opens this thing up yesterday in front of me. He clearly doesn't think it's an issue.
Absolutely not.
Opens this thing up in front of me. He's looking for his wallet.
Yeah.
And he digs into the bag, but he almost disappears into it because it's so big. And you know those, remember those magicians that would pull like a ladder out of their bag?
Yeah.
And they'd pull a chair and a table.
Vases of flowers.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I think goes on in there. So,
but they are essentials here.
Okay,
though.
Show us what supposedly these are essentials.
Okay. Notebook.
Okay, that's
all. Need a notebook.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Cologne.
Give me that.
That looks like
give me that.
You I'm always sorry. Need.
It looks like a French Legionnaire's water bottle.
It looks like something Jesus carried on his way up Golgotha.
It's
John Barbados,
Lawrence of Arabia's water flask.
But you see, that's like my.
But why don't you? I mean, why is it that big? Why don't you have those miniature size?
It smells very nice here, but it does look like
it's for a different occasion, though.
I think prehistoric man used this.
So essentials, ne? Then we've got a fluff brush.
Absolutely. You never know when you might need that.
That if you've got like pet hair on your clothes and you need something static to remove.
But it's in the box.
Which keeps it clean,
Gareth,
though.
If you have it in the bag, it's going to just live in fluff.
Okay, see? I got you. Everything makes sense.
Yes.
So far, we've got about 23 items.
Shoe shine little sponge.
You're kidding me.
You never know when you might need it.
Okay.
So when was the last time you needed this?
Never. He's never used it.
It's just in case.
It's brand new.
You know, if someone else needed it.
Okay, it's still sealed in the packaging.
Overnight toiletry bag.
That's a toiletry bag.
Actually, no. These are my accessories.
What accessories are we talking about here?
No, like you just never know. Like, you know, you might need little
bracelets.
You might need an extra button.
I think in some days you do know. Not every day is going to be... a spontaneous red carpet.
I might need to change things up with a little pin on my shirt. You just never know
these
things,
guys. It's a bag the size of a toiletry bag. Mm. Most of us would use that for toiletries, but he's got...
Okay. All right, we've got...
moisturizer. What's in that blue box?
That's some more cologne.
That's more cologne.
Different one?
So we've got two bottles of cologne.
Just in case the tuna molds of Lawrence of Arabia's flask runs out.
Then we've got a 250 ml bottle of moisturize, well, body lotion.
Sure, because who wants to be ashy?
Guys, these, yeah. Absolutely. These are like the essentials.
What is that thing that my buddy's holding up
it's
now?
It's a key holder.
No, it's a fluffy, you don't need that.
It was a sentimental gift.
Okay, but do you carry it around everywhere?
I do, because I don't rock it on the bag often enough.
It looks like something that would hang off of Snoop Dogg's car.
And I think that
makes
it cool.
Yeah, the rear view mirror.
The rear view, yeah.
See, this is it.
All right, you've got cell phone charges. Okay, but see, he couldn't find his wallet in there yesterday because there was so much stuff.
I still haven't found it. I think it's in the car somewhere. I think. But you see, if anyone needs anything, they'll find it.
I do love it, though.
Listen, everybody's talking about these Ford Cougars, and it seems that there are just awful things happening. One person's already died in South Africa. About 20 people have had their cars just burst into flames. Is that about right? Mubs, what's the story here in terms of the numbers of actual incidents? Because this has got to be very bad for Ford, right?
Mm.
It's got to be the worst thing ever.
To date, it's been reported that 48 Cougars have caught alight in South Africa, Gareth, 11 of them this month alone, because these problems started happening back in 2016 already. Let me take you through some of the important things that, you know, we all need to know, and especially if you drive one of these cars. So the cars that have been affected, all Ford Cougar 1.6 liter vehicles that were manufactured between 2012 and 2014. Mm-hmm. The reason why it took so long for Ford to react, this was a big question during the press conference yesterday. And according to Ford, they said that they were busy conducting, you know, investigations and running all kinds of tests on these engines. And that is why it took so long for them to actually make the decision for the recall. Now, what you've been advised to do as a Ford Cougar driver, if you notice, you know, any kind of warning lights that pop up on your vehicle,
I'll jump out of the car.
Yeah, pull over on the side of the road as soon as it's safe to do so. And whatever you do, do not open the bonnet, Ford says. Rather call roadside assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ford have said that they're going to be working with, you know, insurance companies with regards to making sure that all Ford Cougar drivers are, you know, given courtesy cars for them to have in their possession while their vehicles have been recalled for one, like a two-phase.
What, just like better Cougars? Jeez.
I actually don't know if I actually don't know, Ben.
Well, you know what? The people I rely on when it comes to anything to do with cars are the guys who have hosted Auto Central here on cliffcentral.com for like the last 2 years with us at Auto Trader. Their CEO, George Meany, and he's got Chad, and he's got Tyrone, and he's got a whole bunch of people who really know what they're talking about. Gentlemen, are you all here this morning? Hello?
Yeah, Gareth, we are indeed.
Hey, guys,
good
listen.
Morning, Gareth.
What the hell's going on with these Ford Cougars?
Well, I mean, I think it's a tragedy that somebody has to lose their life, but it's absolutely terrible. I'm not sure that all of those incidents happened in South Africa. Chad's got the actual numbers. You want to run through those numbers,
Chad? Please?
Actually, there's over 40 cases reported in South Africa. There's only 39 or so that have actually been reported and recognized by Ford so far. So there's a couple of unreported cases. But social media, I mean, the guys have just been going absolutely crazy on social media with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually been one of the big problems. They've been going to social media and not Ford.
Mm-hmm.
They only really got hold of Ford way, way, way too late. And that's why things seem to have taken so long.
Now, it's only with this make of car, so there's clearly some kind of flaw in certain models, but it's only in this particular make. Am I right?
It is one model and one derivative. It is only the 1.6 EcoBoost Ford Cougar, and it's only for a specific manufacture period where there's clearly a defective part or something of the sorts.
Yeah.
It's been very difficult for them to analyze. Fire is very, very destructive. So once a car's burnt out, to sit there and try and assess and figure out, analyze what was the cause of that fire becomes massively difficult. I mean, Ford has done a lot of hard work. I'm not straight out defending them here. I'm just going on what I've been told. And they've sent one burnt out shell over to Europe, and over 15 engines for investigation and assessment to Europe.
This is Chad, you said something. Sorry, Gareth.
No, go ahead.
You said something to do with the turbocharger that is overheating the engine bay and causing the fire.
Well, that's what they've managed to conclude so far, is that there's a rapid overheating that is happening due to a cooling issue, and that causes the cylinder head to crack. And once the cylinder head cracks, oil leaks out of the engine, and that hot oil getting splashed onto the piping hot turbocharger, mm-hmm. exhaust manifold, and the catalytic converter just make things, well, combustible.
That's terrifying. Now, George, what does this do to the price of these vehicles, and what does this do to anybody who's trying to sell them or someone who's trying to buy them? I mean, what happens there? You guys know you sell more cars than anybody else.
Well, I mean, I would suspect people would start getting nervous, and you know, the first inclination that anybody would have is I don't want to get in the car and drive, or I need to get rid of it, and it's anyone's guess what happens to the price of the cars and to the resale value and to whether they sell or not. You know, I would suspect people start to get nervous and just back off. Selling it's not going to be that easy if there's mass panic in the market.
Sure.
So, you know, Ford has recalled this car now officially, from what I believe, and that should save the day. But if they did nothing, I would suspect that the value of the car would drop through the floor.
Ashley says on WeChat this morning, it's like the Ford Pinto from the 60s all over again.
Yeah, that was actually brought up in the press conference, eh?
Hmm.
And Ford went on to say, you know, that lessons learned from the Ford Pinto and what was essentially the exploding fuel tank issue, lessons learned from that have been carried forward, and they don't want the same sort of loss of life that they had back then. They're still putting their customer safety as priority number one.
This must cost them a fortune, right? This is going to really tear them.
Astronomical. I just want to get back to that the pricing issue. The general consensus in the market, on the waves and that at the moment, is that people are losing faith in the product and faith in the vehicle. And there's even been reports of dealers offering well below trade on people that wanted to trade in now what was, you know, what they believed was sketchy Cougars. So that's something that Ford's going to need to address. And I think that's going to be the marathon. That's not going to be fixed overnight.
Jeez. George, you wanted to say something?
To what Chad was just talking about, I think if there's mass panic, there's going to be an absolute decimation of this product. And a question I had, Chad, was has Ford given any indication of what Ford Cougar drivers should do to avoid any mishaps with the car? Is there anything that anybody can do to stop their car from setting a light, you know, besides leaving it in the driveway?
Okay, well, let's treat this as a bit of a public announcement, a safety announcement here. If you have a 1.6 Ford Cougar, the 1.6 turbo, it's probably going to be about a 2013 or a 2014 model, because the manufacturer period specified is from December 2012 till February 2014, which, you know, it's, and we're talking about 4,500 vehicles plus here. Yeah, that's a lot. Ford is saying get it to a dealership immediately. They will be able to check it out, and now with this recall taking place, they will be able to start implementing the first phase of this recall, which is updating parts and software on it to prevent this fire from happening.
They've also said that they will be providing people with other cars in the meantime. I mean, that's just also going to hit them on their bottom line in a big way too. I mean, we know these margins are being tightened everywhere in cars at the moment, and this is just terrible, terrible news from a brand point of view. But I mean, if they react quickly, they could save themselves even more damage, right?
Exactly.
They could, and unfortunately, the NCC had to put pressure on them to force them into this voluntary recall. And they're making it known that it is a voluntary recall and that it wasn't forced on them by the NCC. Right. But had they not implemented this, or stage one of this voluntary recall, NCC would have stepped in and basically forced them to recall all the vehicles. And that, I think, would have been a considerably greater loss than the voluntary recall where they're replacing parts. They would have probably just had to, you know, accept the vehicles back, offer some sort of deal on the vehicles, a payout, something of the sorts. And that was would have been an absolute nightmare and hideous for Ford.
Well, thank you very much for helping us clear it up, guys. I whenever I have questions about these things, I need to rely on you. So thank you. And I suppose, George, you've already put out some messages here helping people to figure out whether or not they need to be careful. The 1.6 EcoBoost manufactured between 2012 and 2014, the Ford Kuga, that's the one that is affected. And that's the only model that is affected. So you need to know all of that. And you can always follow George or Auto Trader on Twitter and on other social media to find out more. Thanks so much, guys.
Pleasure. Thanks, Gerda.
Thanks.
Very bye-bye. Cool. There we go. Some useful info for people who are worried. And you should be worried. My God, your car blowing up.
But Gerda, just to give you kind of a background on car recalls. Now, Ford's, this isn't the first time. So I found a couple of examples. In 1965 to 1969, there was the V8-powered General Motors car, which is a beautiful-looking car. The only problem was the engine kept falling out of its mount.
So you're driving and then, boom, out falls the engine.
No, you drive right over your own engine.
No, it wouldn't fall out of the car. It would fall with so it would come out of its mount within the bonnet area. What this would do is it would pull on the throttle. So you'd be doing 20 or 30. Suddenly you're doing 60. Because the engine would rattle out of it and then it would go. And
imagine some old lady.
Yeah, exactly. Like an old lady just going along the line. And out of nowhere, she hears like a bit of a jiggle and suddenly she's doing 80.
Sure.
So they had to recall. There were 63 accidents, 18 injuries confirmed. General Motors at the time said, oh, it's nothing worse than a flat tire. Obviously, the courts felt differently. They mentioned that Ford Pinto, basically the fuel tank wasn't reinforced enough in the back of the car. So these bolts would come loose. Any sort of collision, bang, fuel tank would be compromised, kablam, explosion. So there were more fires there. There was a truck in the 1970s that basically you would park it by putting it in reverse. It sounds stupid, right? Because it bloody was. So the car would be all kinds of accidents to the car. It's a complete sort of mistake from the manufacturer. And they had to recall 21 million vehicles, basically. 21 million would have come back if every single one was recalled.
Yeah.
But they managed to get through on a technicality just to tell people that there could be some accidents happening with the car moving uncontrollably. And then in the sort of turn of the century, Ford's Explorer was kind of dubbed the Ford Exploder because there were some faulty parts used in the rubber of the Fords back then. So the cruise control switch was faulty. So you would try to activate that, it would short circuit, it would spark, and then there would be flames.
Jeez.
So these things do happen.
I'll tell you what.
And unfortunately, Ford has had a bit of a run.
We thought cars were dangerous just when ordinary people drove them, but it seems sometimes even the machines are against you.
But you also saw it with Toyota. They were expanding so rapidly that they were using different manufacturers. So they have a certain level of manufacturing quality, and then suddenly a new up-and-coming company is fitting the rubber to the door or to the engine units or whatever it is. And that one little component can mess the whole thing up. So Ford, in their mind, could produce a fantastic car, but there's one little component, and that's what makes it so tricky.
Jeez. Well, do you want to hear the CEO of Ford?
Yeah.
And then we'll move on to the other stuff that's in the news, because I know there's lots more.
I'd like to start by saying that the recent fires affecting the 1.6-liter Ford Kugas have been extremely unfortunate and concerning for our customers and for ourselves. I want to reassure you that at Ford, the safety of our customers is our number one priority. We fully appreciate and understand the high level of concern and disappointment that has been expressed surrounding this issue.
Disappointment? Someone burnt to death. It's a little more than disappointing.
While we continue to investigate the Kuga 1.6 engine compartment fires, based on the current data, we have determined that the fires are due to overheating caused by a lack of coolant circulation, which can lead to a cracking in the cylinder head.
All right, we've covered this already. I don't think we need to hear more from him, huh?
Yeah, the person in question, Gareth, that you mentioned, the driver who lost his life, Rachel Jimmy, Ford did say that they are still continuing with the investigation into his death, but that they believe that the incident was a unique one and unrelated to these other incidents of engines catching fire.
But it just happened to be a Ford Cougar 1.6 turbo EcoBoost.
They say that they're continuing to work with the family and authorities to get, you know, a final conclusion on the cause of his death.
All right.
Very unfortunate that somebody had to lose their life.
Greg says on WeChat this morning, that's why Ford stands for first on the rubbish dump. You know, people are piling on.
8 out of 10 of the biggest recalls in car history have been Ford/General Motors. 8 out of 10.
Okay, that's not a good record.
Ashley says, disappointed to death. That's how Ford are. Yeah, and then this came in from Roman, who says, Sia is the South African version of Mary Poppins with that bag.
I will actually take that as a compliment. So thank you very much, Roma.
Very good. Very good. Okay, everybody. Okay. What else is going on? This can't be the only thing in the news.
Well, we mentioned very, very briefly yesterday that they have now whittled down the number to just 8 men who own more wealth than half the world combined, right?
Wow.
Yes.
Just let that sink in for a while.
Yes, yeah.
So eight men.
Eight men who own more.
More. Than half, more than half the
of the
more
world.
Wealth,
yeah,
than half the world combined.
Listen to this guy.
Wow,
this guy, he was interviewed about this. Listen to how angry the interviewer gets with him.
Wealth, this is according to Oxfam, of the world's 85 richest people is equal to the 3.5 billion poorest people.
It's fantastic, and this is a great thing because it inspires everybody, gets the motivation to look up to the 1% and say, I want to become one of those people. I'm going to fight hard to get up to the top. This is fantastic news, and of course I applaud it. What can be wrong with this?
Really?
Yes, really.
So somebody living on
I celebrate
a
capitalism.
Dollar a day in Africa is getting up in the morning and saying, I'm going to be Bill Gates.
That's the motivation
only
everybody
thing between
needs.
Me and
I'm
that
not
guy
against
is
charity.
Motivation. I just need to pull up my socks.
I am
oh,
not,
wait, don't... I don't have socks.
Look.
Whoever that lady is.
I don't have socks.
That was fantastic.
She's a rock star.
Okay, so these 8 individuals, surprise, surprise, all of them are men, obvs.
Sure.
They have
because we're better than women.
Yes, of course, Gareth. they have largely made their fortune in technology. Yeah. Most of them are American, with 1 European and 1 Mexican in the mix.
That's right.
Collectively, their net worth is $426 billion, while the 3.7 billion poorest people in the world are worth $409 billion. Okay? So, let's go through these 8 tycoons. There'll be no surprises here with a lot of these names, but let's do it anyway.
Let me guess at a few. Okay.
All right.
The Mexican was easy to pull up. That's Carlos Slim, the telecoms guy. Bill Gates is in there.
Buffett.
Buffett's in there.
Buffet.
Warren Buffet.
We've got Zuckerberg.
All
right, that's Facebook. So I've got 4.
Wait, is he in the top 8?
I've got
the
half.
World?
I've got half of them.
You've got half of them, Gareth.
Let me see who the others are. Tell me.
Okay, so we've got Amancio Ortega, who is worth $67 billion. Yes.
Zara, yeah.
He opened the first Zara fashion shop back in 1975, and now the chain is part of Ortega's Indeltex group. He has 7,000 shops globally. See ya. 7,000 Zara shops globally.
So Zara is bigger, for example, than the Louis Vuitton group.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Much bigger because he's in this list and the
Louis Vuitton. And all of those, they're owned by a guy called François Pinault.
Do these people know the price of bread?
No, they don't need to.
For they don't like even eat bread.
They pay people to know what the price of bread is because they don't have
what
time.
Milk
they,
costs.
They don't have time to know what the price of
they
bread
don't buy
is.
Buy bread. They have a bakery in the basement of their house.
These guys eat Baker Carpaccio. That's how rich they are.
Right.
All right, Gareth, you didn't get Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg is actually number 8 on the list.
Former mayor of New York.
He is the poorest one on the list.
Shame, poor guy.
At $40 billion, Michael Bloomberg is the poorest on this list, okay?
Yeah.
Obviously, he created the financial information provider back in 1981 after getting laid off from an investment bank. Bloomberg made it a lucrative business, in particular by selling data terminals to financial services firms.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
Who else?
Okay, so Michael Bloomberg.
Bloomberg, Zuckerberg, Gates, Slim Ortega, Buffett. Who we got? Do we get three left?
We've got two left.
Two
did
left.
You, did you name six?
Yeah. Mm.
All right, there's Larry Ellison.
Oh, okay, Oracle.
Yes, you are exactly right. As a young programmer back in the 70s, his first big client was the CIA.
Hmm.
The name of the project was Oracle. And in 1977, Ellison and Associates used the name of that product for their company, which creates software that helps manage databases.
No Waltons in there? No.
No.
You know, they own Walmart. No Cox. Cotches.
Cox. No, no Cox. No. The last person on the list that you didn't get.
Coke.
No, not the Coke.
That's how they pronounce it, but you know what I mean. They're the big funders of the Republicans.
The founder and CEO of Amazon.com.
Oh, Jeff Bezos.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
He comes in with $45.2 billion. Helped revolutionize the retail industry by popularizing online shopping.
Yeah, Romain asks a very good question. Oxfam are really a very strange group. Why, as a charity, are they so obsessed with billionaires?
Because everybody wants to know why some people get to be as wealthy as these guys and then others don't. It's like it's a natural jealousy thing.
Jealousy, that's the whole thing, right? I mean, none of these guys, you can't say any of these guys in this list inherited a damn thing. All of them have made their own money themselves with their own ideas, right?
Wow.
Every one of the people on that list. The 8 richest people in the world didn't get a handout from a government. They didn't have friends in high places. They all worked themselves into this. Warren Buffett wasn't a rich man to start off with. Larry Ellison wasn't a rich man to start off with. Bill Gates wasn't. These were geeks.
Bill Gates is number 1 on the list.
Damn. How much is he worth now?
So he
must be approaching 100 billion by now.
According to this list, he sits at $75 billion.
Oh my goodness. But you see, the thing with being on this list or having so much money is you get stuck in the machine. None of these people can now be at a point of saying, oh, okay, now I'll just sit back and truly relax and retire and travel. You're in this machine. You now have to maintain it. You now have to keep on going. So that's why they should just give me like a billion.
But well, you know what? That I mean, that clip that you played with that the exchange between that man and that woman.
Yeah.
That woman got upset and the guy said, no, this is a good thing. How can this be a bad thing? Because it can motivate people. Can I just call bullshit on that?
Yeah, of course.
Because everybody thinks, hurry, if they work hard enough, then they will also become millionaires. No, you will not. We are not all going to be wealthy. These are the facts of life.
The worst part about this is we are not all equal. Some people
We know this.
Some people just are lucky. Some people have great ideas and others, the rest of us are too slow, or else we have the great ideas, but we don't put them into action.
Some people have great connections.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's one deal. One deal can set you up.
Facebook.
Yeah. He stole that from the Winklevosses.
From the Winklevosses.
Remember them?
Remember them?
Yes, I remember them.
Anyway, look, there are a couple of questions here. The Rothschilds should be on that list, but their wealth is spread out. Says,
that's a good surname.
George and Ndipiwe also asking about the Rothschilds. Well, the Rothschilds are a banking family. They're, according to conspiracy theorists, they are the most powerful group in the Illuminati.
Oh, of course, the Illuminati.
But really, they only are about 150-odd years old as a family in terms of their prominence. They came from nothing as well, set up banks in, I think it was Belgium, Holland, France, eventually in England.
Mm-mm-mm.
And Evelyn de Rothschild, who's the current head of the family, they've certainly got lots of money, but it's mostly, it's all in banking. It's very hard to figure out exactly what they're worth as a family, but they're not on that list, funnily enough, because their money is kind of bricks and mortar money, you know, whereas Bill Gates' money is the value of Microsoft and his shares in Microsoft more than anything else.
But also it seems like this list took individual wealth into consideration and not accumulated
not family wealth.
Yeah, not accumulated family wealth.
Well, look, in terms of family wealth, there's a book called Who Owns the World? No, I'm going to bring it for you to look at. This God. Is astonishing. Do you want to guess who the richest person, I mean, so rich, they're not on that list, richer than all of those people, money into the trillions. Anybody want to guess? One person.
Do we know this person though?
You will know exactly who this person is. Rich beyond measure, and I'll explain why in a second.
Vladimir Putin, obviously.
No, but he should be on that list, and we don't know what he's worth. He probably would be worth a couple of hundred million, maybe even a couple of billion without even touching sides.
Yeah, I think with Vladimir, it's not in his best interest to be on this list, because then we would know how much he's worth, and there would be problems with that.
Well, the richest person by far, it's untouchable wealth. Most of it you would never know about because we don't understand the basics of property ownership in the world, and ordinary people don't know anything about owning property. And this person owns between a fifth and an eighth of the Earth's surface.
Excuse me now?
Yes.
The Queen.
Oh. She's a little.
Oh, yes, that's
90-year-old woman.
Doesn't she still own Australia?
She owns absolutely every piece of Australia. She owns absolutely all of Canada. Owns it. Mind you, this is not... She doesn't own the parts that other people aren't living on. She owns all of it. She has to be paid out if you want to take her away from Canada. If you had to pay her out...
Stop.
Oh, yeah. We're talking... trillions and trillions of dollars that no one can afford. Canada would be bankrupt. The UK would be bankrupt. So they've got this funny situation where they let her remain head of state. But effectively, if she wanted to, she could sell Canada.
So what has to happen for Camilla to then inherit all that?
This is me. I was also going to ask this thing.
She has to sit and wait, and she'll be Charles's wife, and Charles will inherit it. But yeah, I mean, everybody looks at the Queen and they go, well, how much has she got in the bank? And nobody knows because she's got lots of bank accounts. And remember, she owns all the tax havens in the world as well. So any illicit money anywhere in the world is either in the Caymans, the Canaries, the British Virgin Islands, Jamaica, the Channel Islands. She owns all of those, which gives her a whole other source of enormous wealth. The land itself, just the land, makes her untouchable as the richest person ever. And this is something people don't understand. They don't. If you go and look it up, there's no such thing as land ownership in Canada or Australia or New Zealand or Jamaica or England, Scotland, Northern Ireland.
But, I mean, didn't she? How?
You can get a freehold, or you can get a leasehold. That's all you can get.
Didn't she acquire all of this land in nefarious ways?
Well, her ancestors killed a lot
of people.
Well,
there you go. Yeah. So how is it still that the Queen owns that land?
Because,
like, why have there not been laws to?
Britain doesn't have a constitution, and it still runs most of those kinds of things on a feudal basis, like they did in 1066. When her ancestor, William the Conqueror, came across the channel and took it with force and violence. Ooh.
But then surely someone could take Lizzie to the ICC then and say, look, you've got all this. There's no way they gave it to you because you've got a lovely smile. The crime was...
Can't dispossess her.
Crime took place in order for you to own Australia.
According to English law, if you want to take it away from her, you have to compensate her. No one can afford to compensate
Can't you compensate her with justice and a good stone talking to?
She is the queen. She owns it. Oh, and in fact, you're her subject in those countries.
Yeah, but she took it by force.
She didn't. Her ancestors did. She's won it by force.
Yeah, but if she's going to be responsible for it, then she's responsible for the origin of how she came about it.
And who's going to take her on? Who's got the money?
Not me, because I've got things to do this week. But I mean, obviously there's means for this.
All these countries should come together and take her on. This is the perfect example of what you mean by the world is not fair. Mm. It's not. It absolutely isn't fair.
You're gonna go and have a 90-year-old lady.
Canada and Australia and all of those other countries, they should get together.
But they like her.
And they
want
take
her.
Her on.
They want her as head of state. That's the funny thing. All right, we're going to Skype. Who's on here, Lucas? Who's this? Go ahead. Hello.
Morning, Gareth. It's Ramon. How are you?
Oh, you've been very busy this morning. Yeah, what's up, dude?
Don't you find it amazing that these so-called 8 richest people in the world? Okay, Carlos Slim is a bit of a crony, but all the other ones, we use their products every single day.
Yeah,
I mean, Amazon has been a godsend for books. Yeah. Facebook's great for meeting people that you didn't know about. Mm-hmm. Microsoft for work. I mean, you use their technology to create Cliff Central.
Yeah.
No wonder they're fucking rich. I mean, come on. What's the mystery here?
I don't have a problem with it, dude. And it seems to me that a lot of people who don't understand economics immediately look at this and go, oh, but this isn't right.
Yes, but those are the same people who don't create any value whatsoever and then moan on Twitter that they don't get the big break.
And what about the Queen? That's a little bit unfair.
the Queen makes more money for the British Exchequer than she takes from the British Exchequer anyway. In terms of tourism, I think she makes 10 times more money for the British economy than what she receives. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't care too much about the Queen either. And she doesn't even do anything with the money.
Yeah, you make a good point, though, about us using these products every day. If you can find a way to make something that everybody needs, like the clothes that the Zara guy makes, you know, what a win.
I mean, just create value for people. Let them see that value. Let them buy your product, and then you'll become rich. It's that simple.
Right.
Okay, it's not that simple, but that's the principle.
Hey, what's going on in the Renegade Report while I'm talking to you?
Well, today we have Professor Ian Benson, who is a legal scholar, mm-hmm. and we discuss the use of metaphysics in trying to create a pluralistic liberal society, because law and politics are just not enough.
Hmm.
And then next week, we speak to a guy called Hunter Martz, who was on Joe Rogan recently.
Oh, he's fascinating. And
very much so. Yeah.
He's been for a long time. He does his own podcast, and he's got some interesting ideas about, you know, kind of where the left have gone wrong and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I'd be interested to hear that. That sounds great.
Well, he basically talks about culture and how we must all upgrade our culture and have what's called idea sex. So we all, black, whites, Indians, all religions, they just come together. What works, what doesn't. Let's denounce what doesn't work and let's create new cultures and new ideas to bring us kicking and screaming into the future.
I love it. All right, man. Thank you.
And that's next week. Thanks, Gareth.
All right, dude. Thanks, man. There
bye,
we go.
Everyone.
What are you pouring there in the background? Is that coffee?
No, I had two already. This is just water.
All right. Cool. No, I just heard something. It was either that or you were taking a pee. All right, thanks, man.
No.
Bye. we can hear everything thanks to Skype.
He was almost disgusted that you'd think, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
How dare you?
How dare I? This is funny. I just want you to hear this quickly. This is this is a woman who's a news reporter. She's busy. You know they do those funny inserts on morning TV? She's at a goat milking situation.
Why?
It gets really dirty. Just listen to this. And then the guy in the studio says something really nasty as well. And it takes her a little while to react. But when she does, you can hear she's pretty pissed off. And then she starts laughing because she realizes it's ridiculous. But take a listen to the whole thing and you'll understand.
All right.
Please.
Now, is it better for me to double fist it or should I do one udder at a time? I am a beginner. Keep that in mind.
I think you should do one at a time.
And did I really just say double fist it? I apologize to every goat farmer out there that thinks.
And every ex-boyfriend.
You know, maybe she could milk a goat because it's in the park.
Mark. No, he didn't say that. It's 6:35.
Wow.
Right?
I am going to milk you. I like her.
That's pretty hectic, huh?
I am going to milk you.
She's great.
Thought I'd make your day this morning with a little goat milking. All right. We've got a little bit of time. What else do you want to throw in here? Ben, you got some sport for us?
Yeah, Gareth Rugby, right? So we know it wasn't a good year last year, 2016.
No.
It drove many to drink. I mean, cheapers. If you, I want to know what brandy consumption was like in 2016 as opposed to 2014, 2015.
Well,
in SA.
All you have to do, if you think that last year was okay in terms of rugby, is look at how few people go to rugby matches now.
Yeah, they really
it's
are.
It's terrifying. These stadiums used to be full.
Yeah, they're pretty terrible. I watched a show yesterday, Getrouwd Rugby, I think it was called.
Yes.
See, because what I like to do...
It's one of Sia's favorite shows.
What I like to do when I catch up on reading, I put things in different languages in the background because I've got this horrible ability to listen to things and it just sinks into my mind. So with that stuff, it's just white noise. But I couldn't help but watch this and go, if there's a TV show like this, why is Loftus not full?
Yeah.
Anyway, because SA Rugby is just so crap, we lose games. So Robbie Fleck, who is the Stormers coach, right? He says that they're not going to really play to the Springbok blueprint because there isn't one. So they had this Indaba meeting last year where they said, well, guys, you know, if we're all singing from the same song sheet, we'll get ahead. So like all the coaches, Robbie Fleck, all the other Super Rugby coaches are like, cool, guys, well, we're here for you. And then when further asked about it, he's like, well, we got to kind of do our own thing because we don't exactly know what the Springbok blueprint is. So Alistair Garcia in December last year, after taking all those beatings, he said, look, sorry, I've got a plan. He sent an email to them, a detailed email saying, this is what's wrong. This is what we need to fix. This is what I need help with going forward. Sorry, what did they do? Well, who knows? They took about a six-week holiday, as all good administrators do. Did bugger all. They're whistling in the wind. And they only go back to work today, apparently.
Isn't it incredible how the sports administrators do the worst job possible? There isn't one of them in South Africa who's really excelled and shown that they know what they're doing.
They're all crap.
They're all crap.
And yet they hold their jobs.
If you look at Sascock and so, I mean, see, Cricket South Africa, I would say, would probably be the top of the pile. These guys seem like they're quite progressive.
Mm.
And the thing is, like, they're not on holiday until the 16th of January. They've got stuff to do, and they're doing it. Just think, if you've had the worst ever 2016, you're going to have a short holiday, right? You can get back at the grindstone pretty quickly. So there's been no response from what I gather from reports to Alistair Garcia's plan of action. You know, there's like Indabas and all these kind of things which pay lip service to the problems. But nothing has happened. And if this doesn't happen now, okay, Super Rugby starts 23rd of February. So if you're Robbie Fleck or any of the other SA coaches and you have been to this Indaba and said, guys, we're here to help, but you have no idea what you're helping with a month out from the start of this tournament. What's going to happen? Okay, guys, we're playing our first game tomorrow. Just got the email from Saru. We want to do this, this, and this. I grew up. These guys, like, you knew the problem was last year, none of them got fired. This whole board should have been disbanded. They should have been thrown out, not even so much with a bag as big as Sia to take their belongings.
Wow.
They just needed to be thrown out. They're all rotten, and they're just incompetent. I mean, I'm sure they're lovely guys. I'm sure if you have a couple of drinks with them, they might be decent people.
Yeah.
I don't think they are, but it must give them benefit of the doubt. They just haven't achieved anything, and to think that we're middle of the way through the first month of the year, and we're not really seeing anything.
Well, rugby, what's the prognosis going forward, Ben? I mean, are you hopeful, or do you think that this is just the beginning of an even greater deterioration, considering last year was such a disaster?
Because it's a professional sport and because there's stakeholders at play here, I think many whips have been cracked in the background, so it can't get much worse. Because people realize that this isn't a gravy train. Just think, SuperSport's going to hemorrhage viewers and lots of money if the Boks keep losing, right? SuperSport's a major investor in SA Rugby. They're hugely involved. So they're not going to be very happy. Again, you've got private enterprises involved here. If it was just these guys sitting on their hands, which is pretty much all they know how to do, then we'd be in problem, like big, big problems. But we've already seen it. You know, Western Province is liquidated.
Yeah.
Private companies coming in to kind of call more shots.
Right.
We've got less incompetent fat people just sitting there and going, let's just do that. Because that's what these guys do. They couldn't play rugby properly to get to a professional level, right? They couldn't cut it in the corporate world to get a real job. So what do? They just try to push some papers around in sport. I'm welcome to be corrected here.
How do you get a job in sports administration?
Cronyism.
It sounds like a perfect place to sit and just count your money.
It's cronyism and all the other nepotism and all the other isms and politics, basically. It's actually, you know what it is? It's politics without ambition. Because at least our politicians are ambitious.
Wow. It's even worse than politics, is what you're saying. Because it's slightly political, but it's much more for incompetent people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's me on the fence on that one, really.
Yeah, I can really tell that you haven't decided what your point of view is.
As always, down the middle. Let's see how it goes from here.
A lot of people asking about Sia's bag. Can we pop that up
on Instagram? Yeah, it's going to go on Instagram now.
Oh, can we choose a good filter for that, please?
Ooh.
And a good angle.
You will get the clutter filter.
Do you know what the funny thing is? Everyone makes fun of it up until I help them with something. When they need to shine their shoes and I have it. You know?
Carl says on WhatsApp this morning, listening to you guys, Oxfam should be less obsessed with making the rich poor and more with uplifting the poor. Yeah, well, that's what they're supposedly about. But you cannot steal yourself rich, believe it or not. It never lasts.
Well, some people are still going to try to do it.
Yeah, and also by taking from rich people, you're not going to make poor people wealthier. Money does not flow uphill. This is what a lot of much smarter people than me have said over the years. If you're lucky enough, or if your timing is just good, or if you come upon some idea before everybody else, and you luck out and you end up with millions or billions, that won't help to take that away from you and pass it around to everybody else. It's not like it'll make everybody else better. That's unfortunately been proven. I mean, you just have to look at lottery winners. Lottery winners, to me, are always the best explanation for why some people just don't get rich and some people do. Like, you could give a lottery winner 20 million rand. Boom, like that. Didn't work a day for it. Just arrived in their account because they won a random number thing.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, about a 90% of the time, according to what I read last year, these people end up poor again. 20 million. How do you blow that?
Oh, but I know I'd be part of that statistic.
Would you?
Guaranteed. Do you guys think you'd be rational and level-headed?
Yeah.
If like 20 million rands got deposited into your account right now.
I think I would.
Well, you know, they say that you should take some time before you spend a cent of that money.
Not I, said Sia.
Because in that time, hopefully, that is when your brain will kick in.
What are you going
to
do?
And you'll start planning for your money instead of just starting to spend.
What's the first thing you're going
to
do?
I will need to think clearly, so I can only do that on a private jet going towards the Maldives. And I will need to book like Celine Dion.
Oh God, no.
Andrea
really?
Pacelli.
Really?
To hum me to sleep because I'm Celine so worked Dion? Up. Yeah, they need to just hum me to sleep together. I'll book them just to
That's what you want?
Sleep just to sing in the corner while I sleep. So that's already like what? 500,000? Gone just in a couple of hours.
Well, just the Celine Dion.
It would be ridiculous. I know that.
Look, if you really desperately want wealth without working for it, just
marry rich.
Just Anna Nicole Smith someone.
Yeah.
And these days, men can Anna Nicole Smith rich women
too. You've heard about this guy called Sumner Redstone?
No.
Oh.
Look him up. He's a 1,000 years old.
Sumner.
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 Sumner Redstone. He was the head of CBS Viacom. Old, just like he looks like the crypt keeper.
He's 93 years old and he's worth $5.1 billion.
Right. This guy just wants younger women than him, sometimes in their 40s, sometimes in their 30s. He just wants them to do weird things. Like he hires he'll be on a plane, his private jet, right? You'll say to the woman, I just need you to clip my toes.
Some
gnarly, gross old man toes. And then he'll just give her $1 million for doing that.
Jeepers.
Would you do it? $1 million.
Yeah.
Does this guy ever go to Coachella as well?
I think he might go to Coachella he goes to old Coachella.
In a caravan.
Oh my goodness. So an ex-girlfriend has once made off with $150 million.
Right. Just for being his girlfriend for a little while. I mean, you would take that ugly old wrinkly penis if you... Come on.
I don't know.
$150 million. It's better than the lottery.
And he's now suing two of his ex-girlfriends for elder abuse.
Why are we laughing? That is terrible. That is awful.
Because he says he was forced to borrow $100 million from the private company that holds his voting rights for CBS and Viacom to cover tax obligations on gifts he gave to the two women.
Yeah.
Nice life problems.
But listen to the things he's asked these girls to do, Sia. That's what's really scary, is the stuff he wants. He has weird in-flight demands, like he wants them to straddle him. Oof. And like I said, clip his toenails and do all this funny stuff. And he's a very, very, he's got like, I don't know if that's a wig, probably a wig. Two former flight attendants who worked corporate jets for years had flown around the world with demanding billionaires, but nothing compared to Sumner Redstone. His weird habits included asking a flight attendant to not only undo his seatbelt when he had to go to the restroom, but also unzip his fly. I flew with him a couple of times, Loomis said. He was always in a bad mood. The now 93-year-old mogul would offer me money to clip his toenails. He told me how he wanted to have it done, and it wasn't your typical pedicure. He said, "You have to straddle me and sit on my legs facing my feet." The Randy executive offered Loomis and other attendants extra money if they removed their underwear while they clipped away. So, I want you to take off your panties and face the other way and clip my toenails. Huh?
Okay, can we have a moment of honesty
he
here?
Offered her between $500 and $1,000 for the pantyless toenail clipping. I never did it, Loomis quickly added. Who believes
oh,
that?
Oh, whatever.
They were like ancient sea scrolls. His toenails were so bad, you'd need a sandblaster to get them down to something. To gently sidestep the request, Loomis would tell Redstone she wasn't supposed to touch passengers. But instead of mollifying the mogul, Redstone would go insane. One time, she refused toenail duty while the Paramount jet landed in Kansas to refuel. Promptly ordered her off the jet. "You'll have to find your own way home," Redstone told her. She made her way back to the East Coast via a commercial flight. He even had Paramount try to get out of paying her the daily fee on that occasion. So he can be mean as well, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, this is incredible. What an incredible story.
So it's very easy for us to judge him. But if you were 93 years old...
What else are you going to do?
And you were worth $5.1 billion. Yeah. Come on. Wouldn't you start...
Well, I mean, if you're 93, it's probably very difficult for you to clip your own toenails, right? You've got to bend over. You've got arthritis in your hands. I can understand why he needs somebody to do it for him.
I'm trying to figure out a way to pretend I'm a woman to get on that jet, because I could do it that 150. I'd take my panties off.
You know,
hey,
just...
Listen, these days...
This is Caitlyn Jenner's long-term plan, by the way. It's all been revealed.
These days, you can be of service to wealthy women, too.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of doing things in planes, there was a recent survey with 700 British flight attendants that were surveyed. 21% of them had sex with colleagues, and 14% of them had sex with passengers.
41%? 14%. Oh,
14%. That's, I mean, does this guy fly commercial as well?
How does that happen when she...
14% of 700 people surveyed had sex with passengers, flight attendants.
Yeah.
That's like, upon
first meeting them, I mean, do you ask him beef or chicken and then you offer him the fish? I don't know. Like, what?
Yeah, buddy, beef, chicken, or sausage.
Like, do they, how do you have sex with a passenger?
You want them. Listen, you're in the sky, you're bored half the time, you're serving people like a waiter.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look a certain way if you want to be a flight attendant. Most of these airlines are very strict about what you wear and about how you look and your hair and your legs and you got to be a certain size and weight.
Yeah, you got to be presentable. But I mean, is it like, do they Tinder on the planes? Because how do you work out? Or afterwards, does the one go up to the other and go, 26E?
Yeah. No, they find
tapping
hot.
That. I'm tapping
like that.
They find hot looking people on the flight. Think about it. It's like going to a nightclub, except you can actually have a conversation.
Is that why they always look to check your ticket?
No.
Can I see your ticket, please, sir? 7F.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, no, I know. It's here. I can read. Yeah.
Room service. I've brought something hot up.
But there was something along the butterfly app, well, BTRFLY app, yeah, for people who are at airports, you know, to let you know.
Oh, if you want to hook up at an airport?
At an airport or online.
That's
yep.
clever. That's good. That's a smart app.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, a lot of people are in transit at airports. They have some time to kill between connecting flights. There's no wife, no kids. People on business trips, they want to hook up. meaningless sex. Yeah, I could see that happening.
Mm. Oh, there's actually quite a few. There's one called the Wingman as well, and their tagline is "Never fly alone."
Yeah, right. Sumner Redstone is waiting with his ancient sea scroll toenails. Come on, my buddy, you'd do it.
No.
Come on.
Honestly.
No.
150 million, babe.
Can you imagine it? It'd be like a 10-year-old baklava waiting to be... That's what I imagine those toenails.
My buddy, I would never ask you if you did it. If you arrived back in the country with $150 million...
To clip his toenails.
I would never ask you a question. I'd say... Hmm.
Yeah, I'll clip his toenails.
With no underwear on.
Yeah, you have to take your panties off.
And you're straddling him.
No, you see now, all these extras.
My buddy, how else do you clip toenails?
Come on, Mabs.
Jesus.
Come on. Please do it.
Actually, my buddy, you can take one for the team here.
Come on.
What, do you think that I'm sharing my 150 million after I get it with
you? Well, we gave you the advice, and we're giving you the pep talk and encouragement. At least a million, just a million for all of us.
All right, let's move on. We've got to get to our guest, Pajuf, who will join us shortly. That is an awesome name. I wish my name was as interesting as that. Here are a couple of messages, though, before we take a break. Gareth, this is... I can't tell who sent this message, but Gareth, I bought your book, but I'm too lazy to read it. Please release an audiobook and read it to us.
Wow. Or for 150 million rand, come over every night of the week and read me a chapter.
That's from Sumner Redstone. Yeah. There we go.
Trim my...
Stop, Ben, please. Please.
Hi, please WhatsApp me and Anthea's email address. I want to... Invest at #invest and want to mail for my forms. Thanks, Marty. Marty, what you need to do is email her invest@cartesian.co.za. But just go to the Money Shot webpage. Everything's on there. You can find all the contacts and everything. This is for you, Ben.
Yeah.
Ben, you speak of rugby administrators in South Africa. Soccer officials have not even commercialized the sport properly. They say they modeled the PSL on the UK Premier League, yet the UK model capitalizes on the quality and production that they also use the festive season to run the league to a point where it's a major draw card during Christmas. Our administrators have been off from December 20th to February the 7th. They say it's because of the AFCON, yet we're not even in AFCON, so I am not getrouwd met soccer.
Well, yeah, look, that's a different show. Look, they're not in AFCON, but many players are in AFCON. So look at Sundowns. They've got a couple of really top Zimbabwean guys. So they're not going to play PSL without those dudes.
Okay.
But that whole thing about administration in football, look, Ervin Khoza basically owns SA football. And if you think Vladimir Putin on the global scale is quite a badass, well, look into that guy. He pretty much says what happens. So if he wants to monetize it, trust me, he has. The league, it's just fine the way he thinks it is.
All right, and one more message from Greg here who says, so how do I know that you guys mess with me daily? Yesterday at work, I had a song in my head and found myself starting to sing a damn Obama banana song.
Oh, Uncle Obama. Uncle Obama. I wanted your banana. Okay,
well,
yeah.
All I can say, Greg, is I'm really sorry. Let's see if we can get... Here's some old school for you. This will make you feel better this morning, especially if you're having a rough start to your day. I can't believe it. It's already after 8 o'clock.
We survived.
Here's Tony Braxton.
Ooh.
Don't you love this?
Yes.
Did you just go, ooh?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Yes.
Wow. Listen to that. CliffCentral.com.